If you'd like to listen to the Daily Blast, plus all of our other DSR content without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, and enhanced show notes for select shows. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code GREG to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code GREG. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. This week, arguments begin in Donald Trump's hush money trial in Manhattan. Trump allegedly falsified business records to cover up payments made to buy Stormy Daniels' silence about their affair, keeping voters in the dark just before the 2016 election, and now a jury's been chosen. Predictably, we're already hearing that Trump's trial won't impact his presidential chances or could even help them. One person who disagrees with this is progressive political strategist Anant Shankar Osorio, who writes in a new piece for Slate that not only will the trial politically damage Trump, it is already damaging him. So we invited Shankar Osorio on the show to game all this out now that the trial is underway. Welcome, Anant.
Thank you for having me.
It's the strangest thing. No matter what happens to Trump, we are always quickly told that it won't hurt him, or that he'll surely escape it with his magical Houdini-like powers. Are we seeing this all over again now?
Yeah, I mean, he seems to have a willing and ready chorus of all sorts of people that either implicitly or directly dismiss whatever egregious behavior he engages in and thereby unwittingly aid and abet it.
Yeah, 100%. And in this case, the press coverage has been extraordinarily credulous, right? Declaring that Trump is turning his legal travails to his advantage by raising money and building support among his base. But what about outside his base? Middle-of-the-road voters aren't going to see this trial the way his base does, are they?
No. And in fact, I think the thing to really zero in on is that we tend to focus and fixate on the differences, the ideological differences between voters and people who are, you know, staunchly progressive or staunchly right-wing, his base, kind of those lured into the cult of seeing him as their Lord and Jesus. But in reality, an equally important and in many ways arguably more important distinction is between voters who are paying attention and voters who are paying no attention. And the vast, vast bulk of human beings, both voter eligible and habitual voters, are still in the latter universe. They are tapped out and tuned out. And that tuned outness is actually overrepresented among what we would call broad strokes, the uncommitted voters, meaning people who are not staunchly Biden, not staunchly Trump, but are trying to figure out what they're going to do in an arena in which, just to be brutally honest, they don't like either of these two top contenders. So obviously, there's been a lot of quantitative research done, and we've done our own internally as well as part of something called the Research Collaborative, of which I'm a senior advisor. But where we really draw sort of more information, the why behind the what, because of course, survey data can just tell you the what, are continuous focus groups that we have been doing really since 2020, but more recently over the last 4 months with what we would call uncommitted voters in battleground states. So these are various combinations of what is commonly called in the media the double haters. I more succinctly call them the no-nos, meaning they don't like Biden and they don't like Trump. What we see out of our no-nos is that they are, except for a small sliver who are genuinely have some sort of attraction slash at least curiosity about RFK, most of them are toggling between different options. So they're basically going, I don't like this and I don't like that, so maybe I'll stay home. they're looking for reasons to clue into the election. And I know it sounds weird to people who are political junkies like your listeners, but they haven't found one yet. And what trials do, and this is, I don't know if it's uniquely American, but it is very American to be kind of obsessed with courtroom drama. There's a reason why in every generation, the top show is some kind of crime procedural, right? And so Americans are very into kind of the theater of the courtroom, the jury selection, the arguments. And ironically, because of the law and order discourse that has come from the right wing as one of their preferred forms of dog whistling over generations, there is this belief that if you are on trial as a criminal defendant, different to civil, then you must be some sort of criminal. And so the optics of this man who bills himself as a strong man in the vein of all authoritarian leaders is being seen as weak, as small, as put into his place inside of a system in which he's on trial as a criminal.
And so there's a poll that I want to bring up with you because it really gets to your point about how tapped out people are and why that will be a problem for Trump over time. It's a Reuters poll. It found that 64% of voters see the hush money charges as at least somewhat serious, with similar numbers among independents. Those are by themselves big findings, but the view of the charges as somewhat serious, I think, indicates very broad openness on voters' part to hear more of the evidence against him, meaning it'll get filled in, the picture will get filled in for them. Doesn't that sort of support this idea that the very tapped out nature of the kind of middle of the electorate is something that actually over time could work against Trump?
Absolutely. Because again, I think that people are accustomed to thinking about presidential elections in this very narrow vantage point of the horse race and two contenders. And in reality, even without the third party, there's always three candidates running in every presidential, and the third candidate is stay at home, is sit it out. And I think that you know that the largest piece of the American electorate always, more than Republicans, more than Democrats, is voter-eligible non-voters. And so the choice whether or not to participate in the first place, which is largely driven by something that we call in psychology social proof. This is just the middle school theory of messaging, right? This is where you do the thing you think people like you do. And so if an election is must-see TV, if you'll let me borrow a phrase, and everyone's kind of paying attention to it and tuned in, as we saw, for example, in 2018 and 2020, in certain places where there was a marquee MAGA candidate running in 2022, which was very different than other places where turnout was, as predicted, down and Democrats lost, when there is a social phenomenon like, you know, Taylor Swift attending the Super Bowl, suddenly people who could not care less about American football care about it. When that kind of a thing happens, then suddenly people start scrutinizing, and the memory hole that they have had, which we can see in these focus groups, that gets much more real to people.
Right. And I think we're already seeing a way that this could manifest itself. Trump is showing total contempt for the process. Let me just go through a few examples. When Trump seemed to be directing his anger toward one juror, Judge Merchum responded sternly, saying, quote, "I will not have any jurors intimidated in this courtroom." Trump also raged at the judge for constraining him from attacking jurors, saying his constitutional rights were being taken away. He's posted about witnesses. He's called the whole case a communist show trial. I think this open contempt for the trial, for the very idea that he should be held accountable, could itself become the political spectacle and become damaging. Him sitting there raging at the judge and at jurors and falling asleep, as he seems to have done, makes him look, quote, "sad and trapped and small," close quote, you wrote.
The story of the authoritarian is that he, and most often it's he, and in this case it is, a strong man. And that the rules don't apply to him. And so when he does things that to regular folks appear, you know, mystifying, to be generous, like he's not making any sense, he's speaking incoherently, he's showing contempt, he's, you know, insulting people with disabilities, whatever, the list could go on forever. We only have limited time. that actually weirdly reinforces his own storyline that the rules don't apply to him, that he makes the rules, that he decides. And if you are a person who feels like the world has worn you down and that America no longer understands you and is not a place for you, and you want to recapture a sense, i.e., make America great again, go back in time where there is an order to the world and you're on top of it, your attraction to this leader is that that's what he promises for you. But to see him in this situation in which, you know, he continues to lash out, but the reality, the construct of the courtroom is that he's not the alpha. He is not the alpha. He is falling asleep. He is, you know, subjected to censure. That messes with his core attraction.
I think you've put your finger there on a really deep irony about MAGA, the movement, the authoritarian streak, and everything. They've been conditioned to see Trump raging at the justice system as a kind of righteous fury, as a sign of his willingness to fight back. Strength, right? But middle-of-the-road voters are likely to see it as meaningful that Trump is facing a jury of his peers and react badly to him treating the whole thing as a scam. But the thing is, MAGA has been conditioned not to believe such a thing is possible, not to believe that there are middle-of-the-road voters outside the bubble that the authoritarian, the strongman has created.
When I think about a state like my own home state of Wisconsin, I'm from Wisconsin, we are so sort of isolated into different communities. You know, the people who live in Madison are so different from the people who live in northern Wisconsin that if you live in a community in which you're surrounded by fellow Trump supporters, and that's who you interact with and who you engage with, and you know that in 2016, those people elected Trump, it's hard for you to wrap your brain around the idea that, just using Wisconsin as an example, Wisconsin, the majority by a tiny little sliver, went with Biden, because you live in, you know, Wauwatosa, and you're like, I literally don't know a single Biden voter. I've, you know, not at the store, not at the feedlot, not at the, you know, church. And so there's this incredulity, like you say, that people have this other point of view because you don't encounter them. And then you layer on to that either you don't pay attention to the news, or you live inside of an entirely fictitious sort of Newsmax own, maybe Fox News bubble. And it does seem very odd that there are these millions and millions and millions of people because you don't interact with them on any dimension. And so, yes, I agree with you. They're in for a rude awakening. And again, I keep underscoring, it's really about these folks who don't have a committed position, including a position to think that the election is meaningful in and of itself. This just raises the stakes for them.
There's a Washington Post poll from a few months ago that I want to bring up. It found that in the January 6th criminal case against him, sizable majorities, again including independents, think the Justice Department is holding Trump accountable under the law as opposed to just targeting him politically. And what's interesting here, right, that we're seeing with Trump and MAGA right now, is that Trump is incapable of imagining that people might actually believe justice is a real thing. Right? He always treats the legal system as pure fraudulence from top to bottom. Everything is political all the way down. Winners talk, suckers walk, right? Whoever wins gets to prosecute, and that's fair and just in how the world works, right? He can't conceive of the idea that people might conclude that the rule of law is legitimately being applied to him. And I think that kind of gets really at the core of what you're talking about here, which is this kind of insular MAGA worldview in which the justice system can't possibly be real, the charges can't be real, nothing's true. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that among MAGALandia, I think that justice is what the leader says justice is. What is right and true and desirable about the world is what the leader says. I mean, it's not, frankly, that dissimilar to being in a cult, right? And the way that you kind of derive your morality and what to do and what not to do just stems from kind of the teachings and the preachings of your leader. I think that for other people who are sort of not existing in that universe, the dynamic, and it's a little bit different than what you're describing. I mean, it's related to what you're describing, but it's really where when we are able to connect for people, and I can put a finer point on this if it's helpful, that the way that Trump is engaging and behaving and acting, it isn't merely just a petulant, sort of unwilling to be accountable toddler who is tantruming about something that occurred in the past, but it really is going to impact your future. When we shift away, and we see this really markedly in our focus groups, away from Trump is and some negative characteristic towards Trump will do and a future-facing agenda that they know to be restrictive of their freedoms, controlling them, deciding their futures for them, that is when people suddenly go from like, ugh, I don't really care about this election. I don't like either of them. We already had these two people to pick from. Why are these the only two people? What have we come to that this is the decision before us? To, oh, expletive, I better be paying attention because this pathway is not a pathway I want America to walk down. And so what the trials do, because they are about even this Bragg trial, is essentially, I would call it a voter deception trial. It's about his not just willingness, but his eagerness to throw all the rules out, to decide for himself whether and when, you know, rules apply, which rules apply, if any at all, and to be willing to deceive voters in order to ensure that he didn't lose the 2016 election, which is the pattern that we saw in 2020. And voters can come to understand will be the pattern in 24 when he is, I would argue, not running for president. He's running to end the presidency.
Yes. And if I understand you correctly, you're basically saying that Trump, what will emerge from the trial is that he scammed his way into the presidency, that he's a crook, right? A cheat. And that's how he got into office. And when people focus again on that full story and realize what they've been through with him at the helm, they'll start to maybe think a little bit more clearly about what another Trump presidency would mean. But isn't it kind of incumbent on Democrats to draw this link a little more tightly? You have a fair amount of elected Democrats, and especially President Biden, who I think it's understandable in his case, maybe. But that they don't want to talk about the trial because then it will be perceived supposedly as tainted by political involvement. And if they refrain from talking about the trial, then it will be seen as impartial. But without someone to draw the link firmly between the kind of scamming and cheating that's being put on display there and a future Trump presidency, will people make that connection? Should Democrats talk more about Trump's crimes?
Yeah, I think it's a subtle question. It's an important question. I think that I understand the strategy from Team Biden of kind of appearing to be above it all and kind of existing on this moral higher plane and, you know, not getting into the messiness of kind of the theater of the trial because exactly what you said, like he wants to appear kind of, this is the justice process working itself out. I'm not putting my finger on any one of these scales. I think that what I would draw upon, because these are complex questions. So we recently fielded a whole set of extensive questions around the Supreme Court immunity machinations, the hearing that's about to be underway in April on April 25th. And we tested a whole bunch of things. And one of the things I actually was pretty sure would backlash, and that's one of the reasons why you test things, is that we asked folks and we used as our measuring stick, our dependent variable, for those of you who speak pollster, we used a forced choice question between the Supreme Court must expedite this hearing so it can be done in time for the trial, the actual January 6th trial, to conclude before the election, or the Supreme Court should take its time, take all the time it needs. So every time they had to, after every statement, they had to decide between the forced choice, hurried up, take your time, hurried up, take your time. And one of the things that we tested was just telling folks that survey after survey showed that if Trump were found guilty in the January 6th trial, it would sway the election. I was sure that would backlash and people would be like, oh, well, that's politicizing it and we shouldn't make the Supreme Court decide faster, because overwhelmingly that made way more people say Supreme Court better hurry the, you know, up. And so I think that
fascinating
when people really understand at any dimension, you know, similar was the case when we reminded folks that the Supreme Court has decided other much more complex things in much tighter time. You know, they decided Bush v. Gore in a day, as you probably recall. Again, they're much more on the side of they better get this business over with in time for the trial before the election. I think that this idea that, you know, we're worried or Democrats are worried about looking like we're politicizing things, the fundamental problem with that argument and why I agree with you that Democrats do need to be lifting this up is because you cannot say on Monday, these people are an authoritarian faction who are coming for your freedom, and they are extraordinarily, existentially dangerous to what we are as a nation. And on Tuesday say, we promise to work with these people, or we're going to pass a bipartisan rule with these people, or not actually call them out at every instance, because either they are this uniquely, consequentially dangerous thing, in which case, why aren't you yelling about it constantly? And if you're not yelling about it constantly, the times that you do, or you do somewhat tepidly, how are people supposed to believe that, right? Either the theater is on fire or it's not on fire.
I think the simplest way to put that is that Trump is running for office in order to cancel prosecutions of himself and put himself above the law. And so Democrats should at an absolute minimum be yelling that day in and day out. I think it probably is worth stressing that, of course, Trump is entitled to a presumption of innocence here, and he may get acquitted on this set of charges and maybe some of the others. We will see. But the bottom line is that voters, I think, according to your focus groups anyway, understand that they have a right to know whether he's a convicted criminal before deciding whether he gets to be the most powerful person in the world at their granting. Anyway, Anat Shankar Osorio, thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Folks, make sure to check out a new piece we have up at TNR.com. Jason Lincoln's diving deep into what's really going on with Clarence Thomas these days, and why Democrats need to start talking about whether a vacancy will soon need to be filled. We'll see you all tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.